Welcome, aspiring entrepreneurs, to another enlightening episode of the CIO Today podcast. I'm your host, Annie, and today we have the distinct honor of introducing you to a visionary leader, Shirley Billingmeyer. Her insights transcend the realm of technology and business. Shirley's journey from teacher to founder of Energetic speaks volumes about her unwavering commitment. Get ready to be captivated by her profound insights as we explore the intersections of holistic well-being and entrepreneurial success. So without any further ado, let's welcome Shirley Billingmeyer.
Thank you so much for being a part of this episode. You truly are a trailblazer, not only for the world of conscious eating and holistic well-being, but also in the art of authentic leadership. So let's begin right with your interview. Can you please explain how Energetics goes beyond traditional weight loss approaches and help individuals reconnect with their innate wisdom about eating?
It's very different than the norm out there because I never tell my clients what to eat and I never weigh them. And why do I do that? Because when you think of an infant, when they are born, they know exactly when they are hungry and they know exactly when they are no longer hungry and they want to stop. With that knowledge, we already had the eating boundaries in place. And then a major amount of interference started. And once that interference started, we lost our eating boundaries. And those eating boundaries are within our gut. So when I started with this entire energetics process, I had taught school for about 6 years. And even in my own feeling of how I felt about size and weight and eating, there just seemed to be an enormous amount of angst, like just feeling terrible about your size and weight, wondering what you should eat or what you shouldn't eat. And it just seemed like so much energy was spending on these subjects. And our creative life was getting left behind because there was so much frustration with eating and size and weight. So my mission after I was teaching was, okay, I'm going to figure out how in the world this became draining of energy when food really was meant to give us energy. And my tipping point was getting the information and looking at, wait a minute, we were all infants at one time and we all own these eating boundaries. Where did they go? Hence, energetics was created.
Right. Well, that's truly something. I'm pretty sure everyone goes through this process, but not everyone would put so much of thinking into it. And now that you have mentioned it, yes, eating definitely sounds like a simple process, but it just got so complicated by the time we are at whatever age we are now.
Yes, and that's what I always say. Once people start with my process, they realize eating is simple. It is life that is complex. And to put eating back in order, once you get it back in order and eat when you're hungry and know when you are no longer hungry and stop. But in addition to that, in order to really be in your body, in order to really feel how the food feels like to you, we need to take the judgment off. This is why I never tell people what to eat. And sometimes that's a panic for people because they're so used to having people tell them what to eat. And I had a client of mine that said, you know what, Shirley, this finally makes sense. When you say, you know, why are people looking to adults to tell them what to eat when my two-year-old wouldn't think of it? And it's because when we're born with over 10,000 taste buds. Those taste buds were supposed to be our guide and our guard of the body. So when you look at the research, it doesn't mean that the research is wrong. But what are they studying? They're studying different groups of people. And that's why the research keeps coming out different. One day you hear, this is good. One day you hear, no, maybe not so much. One day you hear, you should eat protein. No, you should really eat vegetables. So it flip-flops according to what group of people they are studying. And there's research to prove it. It just depends on what that group of people will lean towards. And I'll give you an example. Let's say that you read the research and it says all the health benefits of shrimp. But when you eat it, you break out. So really, who is the ultimate authority of what foods feel right to you. However, if you have so much judgment about what you should and shouldn't eat, how can you even pay attention to those subtle messages of your body? So that's why I never tell people what to eat. I show them how to get into their body by listening to hunger, and I take and give them back total and complete choice so they can want a should, which means, and this is where people will realize, what happens is all of a sudden they'll say, oh my word, there's times when I'm thinking, I really want a salad. That was always when I was on a program, a plan. Mm-hmm. So I give them back total choice because it's nutrition at a deeper level.
Mm-hmm. That is amazing. You know, I remember reading about this somewhere that your body tells you what it wants. So the cravings that we feel is just that, you know, you don't have to overload yourself with them, but your body always tells you what it really wants. Sometimes you might, you know, crave for a chocolate or something, but that's something that your body wants, like magnesium, which, you know, many women may have the craving to go for from time to time. So
when you mention cravings, that's interesting because I always look at cravings like somebody says, oh, I crave chocolate. Well, if you're hungry, of course you can have it. And if you're not hungry, you just say, I can have it later. But if you have that strong desire to eat, when you know you're not hungry, that magnetism to eat, you are craving something else in your life. And taste was only meant for hunger. We were given four other pleasure senses to handle needing pleasure in our life, or to soften an uncomfortable feeling, or to move us through life. But we've robbed taste instead of using our own thoughts and actions and the other four pleasure senses to move us through life. So this whole process is putting eating back in order, but it is a process because there's layers of interference in there. And that's where energetics is different, because when I first started, I thought I just have a few tools. But what happened is people think, oh, if I eat when I'm hungry, I failed. And they almost put it in a diet mentality. And I go, no, that just means there's information in there. There's learning opportunities. What is that strong desire to eat when you know you're not hungry? And I break apart that entire process. So eventually you're back to, I wouldn't want to eat when I'm not hungry because I'll bury the messages coming from my gut.
Right. Also, can you tell me, your book, In the Reading, introduced the concept of tuning into hunger signals, much of what we discussed like now. How did this idea evolve into the comprehensive energetics program we see today?
When I was teaching, and like I said, I just see this frustration. I'm thinking we're on the wrong track. Something is off. And I still had that feeling of angst in my gut. Like I could figure out how to lose the weight, but it was always that fear of, will it come back on? Am I eating the right thing? And I thought, where is this angst coming from? So I tapped into the angst, and that's in your gut brain. Well, to discover that, way back when I published my book in the early 90s, the gut brain hadn't been really recognized with the medical community until the late 90s, when Dr. Michael Gerson named it the enteric brain, realizing that the gut had an actual brain. Well, I was always working from that gut brain, and that angst was no longer an angst anymore. It was messages. I reframed it and I thought, these are messages coming from the body. We need to listen to hunger. And when I when that tapped in, then I realized, oh my word, then I went for the infant. I went, of course, we all own this. There's so many messages coming from within. In fact, they now know that there are 9 messages to 1 from the gut going to the head versus the head going to the gut. So when we don't listen to hunger and we don't have total choice of our food, we're cutting out 90% of the information surfacing from that gut. We need to allow those messages to come forward.
Right, right. Also, can you tell me, you know, because I believe that every person is different and, you know, every body is different. So can you tell me, what kind of obstacles did you have to overcome to get to where you are now?
The obstacles, because I'm intuitive, so I could on the spot feel when mm-hmm. somebody said they had that desire to eat, all they would need to do was give me a little bit of information, and I could create a tool on the spot to help them continuously moving forward. Because when I work one-on-one, there's all of that frustration of size and weight and eating and all of this stuff. I take all of that off, and I work with that frustration within them so that they are really tuning into themselves. So I would create these tools on the spot, and there was multitudes of tools that I would create on the spot. When I published the book in 91, I really thought, mm-hmm. oh, they just need a few tools. Well, as I would work one-on-one, I realized, oh my word, there's massive amounts of tools because everybody is different. And that's why they mm-hmm. would ask me, how long will it take? And I said, I really don't know, because I don't know how many layers are internally. But what I started mm-hmm. to do was then create kind of a foundation of, mm-hmm. of tracking each eating occasion, not what they ate, but they were actually starting to eat and stopping to eat. So I created I call it a recording card, and everybody that mm-hmm. you know works with me understands that, but it creates mm-hmm. a concrete conscious awareness of when you started eating and when you stopped eating. And that awareness is, it's like I take what's going on in the gut right out on that piece of paper, and we can analyze it, and there's an actual moving forward continuously. And as that storage dissipates, as I call it storage, that's my term for fat, because it's stored mm-hmm. information. It's not fat to me, it's mm-hmm. stored information that we mm-hmm. are, that they are dissipating, because we're not meant to have extra storage, because that's for a famine. So it was logical to me, there's something going on here. And so mm-hmm. when I created this process, I had to develop kind of a foundational idea of how we're going to track this. And then I wrote up a lot of handouts and really detailed descriptions, which now I have an online course, and then people can work one-on-one with me, but I don't have to explain so much of how I developed this process, because it's a very detailed process. But like I said, I never weigh them, because all I ask is that storage going in the right direction? Because right. I don't want a game going on between, okay, just tell me what your weight is. It's your weight and yours alone. And people, when they step on a scale, all kinds of things happen. So I want to take mm-hmm. that off of how I'm working with an individual. I want to really work at unleashing their and surfacing their natural boundaries and getting rid of the interference. And so then what happens is the weight comes off naturally.
Right. Also, can you tell me what pivotal moment during your teaching career led to led for you to realize the need for a more compassionate approach to eating and weight concerns among your students?
What I realized, and that's when I work one-on-one, there's no judgment in this. It's information. And that's why I can work, all over the world, because I just listen to their voice. I just hear what they're saying. I hear what is surfacing within them when they have that magnetism to eat. Because once they understand the range of eating, when they know when they're hungry, and I teach them how to do that, and they know when they're no mm-hmm. longer hungry. Once they understand that range, then what happens is that's when the real work starts coming in, and they always know that there's never a time that they can't connect with me, and we will move them past that point. And we will have, there's an understanding with this, because mm-hmm. there's so much out there where people think, oh, there's no way I can just be free of really truly choosing what I want to eat and being in a body I love being in that has no storage, because we're not meant to have it. It's there's information. I always look at that as information. And so once they understand that information, they no longer look at it as work. They look at it as an excitement of learning. And there's the transition. There's no judgment, and it becomes an excitement of learning, an excitement of, gee, what else is within me that I wasn't aware of? So it becomes a real strong, concrete awareness of what's happening within. And that's what I said. Eating is easy. We get that put aside. I put eating back in order. Once eating is back in order, life surfaces and there's a multitude of tools to handle like an uncomfortable feeling. Why do people eat? They want to move from an unpleasant feeling to a pleasant feeling. Something makes them feel unpleasant. Why are they wanting to eat? Why is that desire in that moment? Because it's a moment-to-moment process that I work with these people. Why in that moment do they have a desire to eat? And I just go, you have a desire to eat. And then if they do eat at that time, that's not a failure. There's just a ton of information. And that's what they start discovering. And that's where the excitement starts coming in. Oh my word, I didn't even know that was in there. Because whatever's in the gut, and I work with beliefs and whatever, if there's any non-value-based beliefs in there, it's driving your bus. And you're not even knowing what's happening. And then they go, oh, I see why I can wake up in the morning and say, I'm not going to go in that refrigerator and get the food when I'm not hungry. And all of a sudden, 5 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they find themselves in that refrigerator. And it's almost like, why am I even in here? How did I get here? Because when you use eating instead of your own thoughts and actions to move you or handle the feeling, it becomes stronger than your own thoughts.
Right. This is how, is this similar to how people rely on food when they really should be dealing with things which are actually happening in them? Like, you know, just maybe to escape the problem, people, you know, stick to sweet or they stick to something sour and get maybe a bit of a tick by eating it every time they, you know, find themselves in a position where something needs to be done.
Is it similar to that? Yes. Well, when you said action, and this is kind of a cute story. One of my clients, she said, I could be sitting on the couch and thinking, oh, I should be doing this and I don't want to do this. Right. And what am I going to do? And she said, and then all of a sudden, and she said, I'm feeling really tired and I'm feeling really like I just don't want to do anything. And all of a sudden she said, I thought of something in that refrigerator comes up and I could climb up 2 flights of stairs and not think 2 seconds about it because the food was driving her. She always used food to move her through the day. She was a nibbler. Some people are nibblers. Some people eat quantities when they finally do sit down. So I start the process. And this is a good tool. Like people want to know, well, how would I even start this? And one of the things that I start them with is always sit before you eat. And why do I say that? It's because when you are sitting, you know, you're very conscious that you are sitting and you use your whole being to make that decision to sit, because first you're born and then you get hungry. So we've got to reestablish you as the source of your start. Then once you're sitting, then you start eating. Once you stand up, now you don't eat again unless you sit. And many times people would say, but I just don't have time to sit and eat. And then I say, if you could take all of the energy that you have spent worrying about eating, worrying about what you should and should not do, worrying about the clothes size and if it's changing, and worrying about if that closet is, when you walk into that closet, is just going to be one size that fits and you feel great, worrying about if your health, worrying about what you should and shouldn't eat. If you could take all of that energy and put it on the shelf, would you have more time to simply sit and enjoy your food?
That definitely is one unique approach, Shirley, I must say. And of course, I'm pretty sure not everyone would think that way. So thank you so much for insinuating that thought even in my head. More power to you.
And it's amazing how much people learn once they take eating out of their life. And because I've got to do two things. I've got to give them back the right to truly choose what they want to eat. So part of it is I'm dealing with the eating and allowing them the right to choose what they want to eat without any judgment from themselves or from others. So I need to establish that. So that sitting is really crucial. And the other thing is not doing anything else while you're sitting.
While you're eating. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They just sit and they eat. They do nothing else while they're eating. And so when that happens, they'll feel, oh, I just want to get up and move. I don't have the right to just sit and eat. So there's a whole nother discussion of why don't you have the right to just sit and eat and feed yourself for that time frame of that time, to give yourself that time, because that food is going into you and only you. And it's your inherent right to give yourself that time. Then what happens is they get out into moving through life, and all of a sudden they get stuck and they want to eat something to keep moving, and they want to do this. And that's where we start working on using your own thoughts and actions to handle the food and handle the movement, instead of using eating to handle your movement.
That is right, Shirley. Now that you mentioned it, it really got me thinking even about my eating lifestyle and everything, you know, about how important it is that the food that we eat, that should and is the most important thing in the day, because, yes, you know, that's the fuel to the body.
Yes.
So, yes, you know, I absolutely agree with you. On those notes, is there anything that we must have missed? Please feel free to open to sharing any personal or professional miscellaneous information.
I think probably the most difficult thing for me, because you can tell I love to teach this. I love, my greatest joy is to watch people be totally and completely free to live their life, that they truly enjoy the food and realize I don't have to, you know, if they want to weigh themselves, that's up to them. When they start feeling that joy within, then that's my greatest joy, is to see that they don't need to worry about this anymore. They don't need to analyze the eating anymore. They don't need to spend their time doing that. Their own body has that information. But what's even more important is all the messages coming up for them to handle their life. And once they start using their own thoughts and actions, the other byproduct of this process is, because when you know that you can handle any feeling from the lowest of the low to the highest of the high, and you can handle your movement, and you gradually keep building that in as the food gets put in order, and you gradually keep cutting down those quantities for only the food that you need, and you've developed those tools along the way, the great byproduct is you own that eating, because that choice, you made it from your own choices. Plus, you were able to continuously know how to handle life, which then the byproduct, confidence. So it's not only do you feel that space, like you own your space now, because whoever owns the choice owns the power. So I can never interfere. I would never tell somebody what to eat. I'm not living in their body. I want to empower my clients. I want them to be empowered to eventually, they don't need me at all. They don't need to know anything because they own it now. They're within themselves, knowing they can handle moving their feelings, knowing they can move themselves through. A lot of times what happens is they figure out that if you use eating to move you, you think that you're supposed to process everything in a nanosecond, because eating does do that. That's the error of the eating, because it makes you feel that you can move an unpleasant feeling to a pleasant feeling in a nanosecond. But what happens is you really didn't resolve anything in that moment. You felt better in that instant. That's why this process is a really moment-to-moment process, because you think, oh, okay, good, I felt better. But now you get so frustrated because now all of a sudden it shifts whatever problem was that you were supposed to deal with, now gets shifted into beating yourself up that you ate when you weren't hungry, or that you ate too much, or that you ate this. So what happens is you start figuring out, oh, I need to deal with that desire to eat feeling that comes deep from it within your gut. And in a nanosecond, what happens is people don't even realize that, oh, there's a thought that happens right after that that drives me to eating, because it happens in a nanosecond. Or the chewing. Yeah, in the movement. It happens in a nanosecond, because eating is a movement. We're chewing. That creates a movement. So instead of using your own thoughts and actions to move you, you used eating to move you. You made the decision to eat, it moved you, or you made the decision to eat and it made you feel more pleasant. So now, instead of using your own thoughts and actions for the source of the issue, you use food. And now food becomes more powerful. It becomes more powerful than your own thoughts and actions.
That is right. I think we all would agree to this, that, you know, we should eat to live, not live to eat.
Yes. But enjoy it. Yeah, but enjoy it. It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure sense. We have five pleasure senses. We just robbed taste. We just robbed taste when we were meant to use unlimited resources of the other four pleasure senses. And I'll tell you a cute story. I worked with, he's a CEO of a company. And we got established that, you know, he knew when he was hungry. He knew when he was no longer hungry. He said, but Shirley, I know I've eaten lunch and I know I'm not hungry, but 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I need to eat. And I said, okay. I said, let's just brainstorm here for a second. I said, let's say that at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, eating didn't exist. I said, what are you going to do? And he looked at me and he said, I have nothing to say. It's like I'm sitting in the corner and I have no answers. I said, that's what eating does. When it robs you, it continuously robs you of using your own thoughts and actions and opening up the other four pleasure senses. This whole process is pleasure-based. It opens up all the four pleasure senses. So I said, so let's start brainstorming. Let's start surfacing your creative mind. Think about what you could actually do. And it's got to be something you can actually do. And he said, oh, you know what? I could walk down the hall. I could look out a window. I could just take a break and just relax. So all of a sudden, once we opened up that block of that just eating didn't exist, all of a sudden, all kinds of things surfaced, all kinds of things. And another cute story, because I had a client that said, but what do you do if you don't eat? And for her, I said, do you know somebody that doesn't use food out of order? That's what I always call it, food out of order. And she said, yes, I have a friend. And I said, okay, go ask him what he does when he's stressed or he's bored or he's whatever. So she went to him and she asked him. And she said, what do you do if you're stressed? And he said, I don't know. I might just do some doodling or I might go down the hall and he said, or I might look out the window he had all kinds of things that he would do. And she looked at him. She said, why would you didn't mention eating? Wouldn't you eat? And he looked at it with puzzling eyes. Why would you eat
when you're stressed?
Why would you eat?
How is that
going to
solve it? Right, right.
How is that going to solve it?
An amazing question.
So wow. She was amazed that the people actually just don't eat when they're stressed. They've used all the tools that are within them.
Right. Wow, that's really, I'm pretty sure our listeners are going to be scratching their heads and, you know, going to have amazing conversations with their friends and family about this. So thank you so much for all of the information that you've shared today.
Yeah, you're certainly welcome. It was a pleasure speaking with you, Annie.
Thank you so much, Shirley. Also, you know, we have come to the end of this episode and I really appreciate you taking the time to join us today and enlightening our audience.
And if they want to get a hold of me, my website is energetics, but I need to always spell it because they always think it's E-N. It's I-N-N-E-R, energetics. And I created that name years ago, and it's energy from within out.
That is really insightful. Also, thank you so much for joining us today again.
Thank you. And it was a pleasure speaking with you, Annie.
And there you have it, dear listeners. Another enriching episode of the CIO Today podcast. We extend our heartfelt gratitude to Shirley Billigmeier for gracing us with her wisdom and shedding light on the transformative power of conscious eating and authentic leadership. As we wrap up this episode, take a moment to reflect on Shirley's remarkable journey and consider how her principles can be woven into your own paths. Be sure to subscribe and share the CIO Today podcast with fellow entrepreneurs and leaders who are dedicated to make a meaningful difference.